This is a sermon from Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. Thank you for joining us. Learn more at wdmcovenant.org.
Please join together now in a prayer for illumination. Lord, your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. Speak your word to us today in Jesus' name. Amen. Our scripture reading for this morning is from Psalm 113. You can find that on page 692 in the Old Testament. I invite you to read along with me. Praise the Lord. Praise, O servants of the Lord. Praise the name of the Lord. Blessed be the name of the Lord from this time on and forevermore. From the rising of the sun to its setting, the name of the Lord is to be praised. The Lord is high above all nations, and his glory above the heavens. Who is like the Lord our God? Who is seated on high? Who looks far down on the heavens and the earth? He raises the poor from the dust, and lifts the needy from the ash heap, to make them sit with princes, with the princes of his people. He gives the barren woman a home, making her the joyous mother of children. Praise the Lord.
At this time, I'd like to introduce the members of the San Ysidro delegation that traveled on April 6th through the 13th. We will be presenting our impressions of our trip to San Ysidro to you this morning. So I want to welcome forward Warren Pitcher, our experienced delegate. All right, your clicker is turned on here. All right. And we have three inexperienced delegates here with us today, Anne McGowan, Pam Rees, and myself. And we had two other experienced delegates, Weldon and Marie Michael, who joined up with us in Houston and flew the rest of the way with us. And so we're going to each in turn share some of our experiences from San Ysidro. Warren has the first turn.
I don't know if you are aware, we do have an extra guest here this morning from El Salvador.
Really?
Last evening, yes. Wilfredo Palma called me from the airport and said, please, Warren, I want to join you tomorrow. Buenos dias, amigos. My name is Wilfredo Palma. I live in the canton of San Ysidro, El Salvador, and I am currently serving as the president of the Directiva. I traveled to West Des Moines, Iowa, USA, to be with you this morning to thank you all, the members of this Covenant Presbyterian Church, on behalf of the many families who benefit and enjoy being partners with you in this church. In October 2010, your church sent the first delegation to San Ysidro. The delegation included Pastor Jan Scott, a young Sydney Michael. She would be the daughter of Weldon and Marie. She had just graduated. A gringo named Bruce the Magician, and also Warren, sometimes known as Julio Pitcher. The residents of San Ysidro wanted me to come today to express to you how much we appreciate Covenant and all your various forms of assistance. First and foremost, annual fertilizer for our crops, bean crops, corn and beans. Without the fertilizer, our yields would be very, very low. Second, your annual scholarships for our children who want to continue their education in middle school and high school. Third, assistance with supplying our families with safe water. Each of our home has a storage tank thanks to you folks. Fourth, home visits, when the delegation brings us an assortment of food staples, rice, cooking oil, and additional things like soap and detergent. Five, other forms of assistance, including medical assistance. We have had the Our Sister Parish medical delegation visit our canton, I think it was in 2016. But most important of all these, you send us delegates, members of your congregation. They visit us in our homes. They also host a farewell party for us in the plaza next to our church in San Ysidro on their last day in El Salvador. We take time from our field work to party. We appreciate the financial support and the tangible food and water tanks, but the most important item that Covenant provides us is hope. Life is difficult for us, especially when there are poor crops. Your support and prayers and letters continue to help us succeed in our daily struggle. Our lives are greatly impacted by Covenant Presbyterian Church. Remember, you give us hope. Bye-bye. This is the way Warren usually travels. On any international trips, I always have my Iowa cap, always have my bag, camera, water bottle, rain gear. This is Warren. And as Nathan indicated, this is our original delegation, plus Kathy Bassett, who many of you know, was also our tour organizer and guide. As we indicated, Weldon and Marie were heading up the Socio de Cristo committee until they moved to North Carolina. And at that point, Marilyn Johnson.
If you answer that direction, you shoot people in their eyes.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you. And I need to back up. And but anyway, they joined us, as Nathan indicated, in Houston, and so they were with us. I wish they could be here this morning. The last Covenant delegation was in October of 2015 to San Ysidro. Now, the Our Sister Parish group, medical group, I think was there in 2016. And then in 2017, three of our people in the medical delegation had a three-day extension. But it'd been a while since we'd had a full delegation. And this time, all of the delegates were from Covenant. Sometimes we have members from other churches. I joined late in this 2018 delegation. I caught the deadline January 1. I have other travel plans, and I just reflected on, I'm going to join this group. Just look at this, a great group of people to travel with, and I got to share a room with Reverend Nathan. Now, Bruce Anderson can have an appreciation for that, because he and I shared a room. 8 days and 7 nights with Warren. I'll let them talk later. But seriously, that was one of the, no more out of Bruce. These are fairly new members to our congregation. And Nathan had only been here since September, but you really get to, and I knew Nathan, Weldon and Marie, but you really get to know people when you travel with them. And it was my joy, trust me, to travel with this group. Okay, I'm going to discuss things that we did the 2 days that we were not either traveling or in San Ysidro. Like I say, we were gone from Friday to Friday, 2 days of travel, 2 days basically that we were away from San Ysidro. One was in San Salvador, the capital, and then one was another day trip where we went to two sites. So I'm going to cover those, and then the rest of the delegates will hit on more of the San Ysidro activities. So, on, go to the right. On this would be, we got in on a Friday, and Friday evening we're in San, that, the main airport is in San Salvador, the capital, and we're in, the next morning, we are visiting where Monsignor, actually Archbishop Oscar Romero lived. It's a very modest apartment. When we got there, there was a sign on the door that it would not be open. And once again, I'll show you later, our driver, Alfredo, I bet he wasn't gone 5 minutes, 10 at the most. He and a nun came over, and all of a sudden we could visit the home of Monsignor Romero. Once again, this Alfredo is just tremendous. And I'd been there. This is my third trip. I had been there, and I was so disappointed that they wouldn't see it, but Alfredo got us in. And this is to my back. There would be the closets and with his personal clothing and personal items, and then there's also a bathroom. But anyway, small accommodations. He wanted a modest home. They tried to put him, I think, in a better, more luxurious home, but no, he was quite content. And from this is the exterior of his small home, and there's a garden to my right, and it's kind of unusual, but I think worth sharing. They buried his heart in this plaza, or this garden, and he is entombed in the main cathedral in San Salvador in the lower level. And I forgot to tell Nathan to put in a shot of this, of his tomb, which is very impressive. So 95% of him is in one place, but they did for, and I can't recall the exact reason, but his heart is buried there. Not far from his home, I'd say 3 to 4 minute walk maximum, just go out the front door and take a right, there's a chapel. And this chapel, as you see Nathan and Weldon, the entrance, we're looking right down the center aisle. This is where he was giving mass, I guess it would be. And this is the altar where he was standing. He was shot. The doors opened, car pulled up, a rifle out the window, one shot to his heart. He probably saw the car and the assassin. Some of us stood at the altar where he stood. Powerful to realize that you were standing or Archbishop Romero was standing. Why do we do these 2 days prior to San Ysidro? The pastoral team and our sister parish feels you need to have some background of their struggle to fully appreciate what we're trying to accomplish in 2018. It's kind of grim, some of it. After we left the chapel, Mark, am I going to need some help? Oh, wait a minute, I'm going the wrong way. Yeah. Yeah, after we left the chapel, probably 10-minute drive to University of Central America, where some Jesuit priests were massacred, along with their housekeeper and the housekeeper's daughter. Now, this is a rose garden in front of their small apartments, and we walked into a couple of the apartments. But once again, Jesuits, we saw some very disturbing photographs of these six who were violently killed. Well, I kept telling the delegation, that we're going to have to lighten this up a little bit. And one of the fun places to visit in San Salvador is the artisans market. And those of you, show of hands, how many have been to El Salvador? I bet most of you have hit the artisans, I hope you have, in San Salvador. And I've enjoyed gifts, and it's just a wonderful place. And also, we have lunch, as you can see, pupusas. Nathan must have taken this. The rest of us are in there. And here's our driver, Alfredo, on the right. And here's another picture of him, who I was bragging about. He takes care of about 98% of the delegations who travel to Berlin. And you realize Berlin Pastoral House has several churches, not just Covenant. But he is their number one driver, and he really takes good care of our mission co-workers who have been women the last two. Bob Cook was first, and then we had Kathy Bassett and then Catherine Peter. But I can assure you, he takes good care of all the delegations. When you're in San Salvador, just as places in Chicago you don't want to go, he may know of places in San Salvador we should not go. He's very good. One day we got into a traffic jam on a Saturday trying to get back to Berlin. this six-lane highway just was a parking lot. And he got us onto some side roads and got us back. So we had a wonderful time, Alfredo and I, just like old friends. I had a Berlitz book, Spanish, English, and I often sat up front in the van so Kathy could kind of be in the middle of the van to talk with our people. So here I am leafing through my book, and I decided when we came home, I'll give it to Alfredo because he's kind of interested in it. And I said, I expect you to speak good English when I come back. Okay, continuing on, we're now on Sunday. We had been to Berlin with Alfredo. His van is about a 16 or 15 passenger air-conditioned van. We don't use the pastoral team's truck on lengthy trips. We just use that to get to San Ysidro. But anyway, the next day, once again, kind of some heavy stuff, we go to a site, El Mazote, where there was a complete village massacred. One woman escaped. She was able to give the story about what took place here. And as you can see, Blanca, Cecilia, Kathy, those are the three people that are full-time in the pastoral house. Now, right now, Kathy's the interim. So basically, we only have Blanca and Cecilia. Blanca does not spend the night there. Cecilia is the only staff member that's there 24/7. And when the mission co-worker was there, at least there were two people. But we think this is fairly safe. But anyway, that's a kind of a side note. I happen to have all three of them in the same picture. But here we are at El Mazote, the massacre site. And behind, over here, are the listing of all the names of those who were lost. Back to our staff, this woman, she only gets from noon Saturday to 6 a.m. Sunday off. She's there all the time. You can't imagine how many times that buzzer rings where they go to the front door. She is the only staff member paid. She is paid $125 a month. And she makes coffee for me. 6 o'clock when I wake up, I go down. So she's in cooking breakfast, but she was originally hired as Bob Cook's housekeeper. And I just can't say enough about Blanca and Cecilia and the mission co-worker. It's a team of three, it's like a three-legged stool, and unfortunately, we only got two legs. Very important. Moving along in El Mazote, once again, a complete families were wiped out, and their names in the plaques behind them. About a half to three quarters of a mile, well, this is still in the plaza, and the plaques would be to my right. This was a church we were not allowed to enter. And on the right side, there is another rose garden similar to the one we saw where it was in remembrance of the children who were killed. Like I say, adults and children. Sidney Michael and I and Bruce got to visit over here with Pastor Jan, but they don't let us visit that portion now. And then, like I say, about a half to three quarters of a mile, here is a fairly new large monument, which more appropriate for the tremendous loss of life that was there. And we spent a fair amount of time there and then went a little bit further. And Reverend Nathan informed me this is St. Francis of Assisi with a young man. And I think it's once again, it's in tribute to so many of the children that were lost. We, right behind this, we're up high in our group with Blanca and Cecilia. Blanca had some remarks. We joined hands. Very emotional time. Okay, on Sunday we had a second stop. We went to a museum and a guerrilla encampment. And the museum had several rooms, and as you can see, we've got our guide, and Kathy, of course, has to interpret everything he says. So very little English spoken in El Salvador. So it takes a bit longer because everything is translated. So we went through several. This is wreckage of some helicopters that the guerrilla shot down. But once again, they had a terrible civil war. It went on for, I think, about 17 years. Terrible civil war. And once again, you're getting a background of what these people have been through. And like I said, I've been there. I know Bruce and Lisa recall these shots. And in the encampment, I didn't want to get my clothes with clay dirt on them, but Pam did, an underground, frankly, for safety. And another thing we found fascinating, in the terrain, they had several suspension bridges. And Marie, who had, as a short person and had short legs, had the biggest challenge. Some of those steps were quite a ways apart. And the Rev, he was pretty balanced. He was pretty, he had it together. And nobody fell through the suspension bridges. But they get you going up and down and left and right. And I had my fingers crossed that none of our delegation, because we were a long way from medical help there. And this is where we called home. It's hard to get a good shot of the pastoral house, but you're on a main highway. This is a truck that we recently acquired, brand new. You can see a rack, they built a special rack, and here's Kathy. She's always very serious, as you can tell. I got to travel with her in 2010, and I very much enjoyed. She knew me, and I knew her, and yeah, we had a good time. But anyway, this is, to the left, there's a chapel on the lower level. This is a dormitory where large delegations stay above the chapel. So we got quite a bit of frontage on the main highway. And there used to be, to the left, a very nice mural. But the bureaucrats of the city of Berlin, for some reason, they had to paint it over. So all we have now for identification is just these three words. And we had a wonderful, I think Bruce and Lisa probably remember the mural. Well, I know I have others that want to talk. I got to wrap this up. But I wanted to just kind of give you an overview of what, you know, people say, well, what do you do down there for 8 days? You know, 2 days travel, one down, one back. You're in San Salvador. We got some things to do in San Salvador. And then eventually we get to, what should we say, a point where we're ready to focus on our particular partnership with San Ysidro. And then one more picture. This is where the mission co-worker lives. It's a kind of a combination office and apartment. And once again, you can see it is a secure compound. And I wish I had a good map to show you. It's fairly large. We got some width along the highway, and it's fairly deep. And I feel that our mission co-worker is safe. I think we have established credibility that they're kind of going to leave them alone. But I have to also show, you see bars on windows about everywhere. And that became our home, and it was, six nights we were there. And I stayed in the same room the three trips I've been there. So there's something about just like the homing pigeon. I go back to the same room. And once again, I just want to thank the congregation for assisting these families in El Salvador. It started a long time ago with Bob Cook. And if any of you have any inclination to want to go down there, I encourage you to do it. It takes some physical stamina because you're physically standing in the back of a truck. But anyway, thanks again. Tip of the hat for supporting it. And now I'll hand this off.
So I want to talk about the directiva. So when we go to San Ysidro, we go to visit our family, but we don't just sort of barge in. This is the group that really facilitates everything that we do in San Ysidro. We always try to follow the established lines of authority so that we aren't sort of coming in and imposing what we think should happen. Rather, we're coming in and partnering with what's already going on in San Ysidro. So the directiva is the democratically elected leaders of each community, and they set the priorities for development, and they find the resources to develop their community. They organize the work to get it done. They also do all kinds of logistical magic for us. So they accompanied us on every day of our visiting, following along with their census of the community, which we aligned with our census of the community. They are aware of, our directiva in particularly, is aware of the complication of having two different systems for keeping track of the community. They could tell what we were doing, and they said, next time you're here, we're going to have our numbers and your numbers all line up for each family. And that's our directiva. They know what they're doing. They also arrange for a delicious lunch to be prepared for us every day of our visit, which is just a humbling gift to receive because we are aware of what a huge investment that is on the part of the community. So these were some of our everyday cooks who would, of course, have to cook the food in their own homes and carry it down to the meeting house where we would eat. On our first day in San Ysidro, we were welcomed by the entire community. We went in and introduced ourselves and were introduced to the community. Another really great thing about San Ysidro is there are Catholics and evangelicals, which is everybody who's not Catholic. So Catholics and Protestants, and often in communities there's kind of a divide between the Catholic and the Protestant communities, not in San Ysidro. In San Ysidro, the mostly Catholic directiva invited the Protestant pastor to give the invocation at our opening meeting with the community. We got to meet some of the scholarship recipients. Some of the scholarship recipients were already gone at school, but these were some of our scholarship recipients who each one of them spoke to us in front of the whole community to say who they were, what they were up to. We also heard a lovely song from these two young ladies. We got to hear them sing again when we visited their home and when we visited the classroom. The teacher tried to have the whole classroom sing, but when you've got these two girls in your class, nobody else sings. It was beautiful. We met with the directiva and talked a lot about water, as you can imagine. So you can see in this picture, down on the lower left, you've got the, 750-liter tanks that we were able to provide for each household. Then in the background, the big one is a 5,000-liter tank that the Directiva has been able to get for round about half the households, or this being our Directiva, they stationed these so that households could share them. So when we got updates on the water, they talked about these big water tanks that then we got to go see. That sits on a poured concrete slab in each location. Water is still very much the limiting resource for life in San Ysidro. So water comes in pipes 2 days a month. Those days are consecutive. So about 16 hours over the course of 36 hours, they get water. And they, of course, when the water comes, they fill everything that will hold water. And they're typically able to get everything filled, but it doesn't last the whole month. So that's the place that our Directiva is. And so they are working on getting more water tanks to outfit the rest of the houses so that there's a water tank for each house in the community. They are also working on applying for funds not through us, but to a separate organization for a larger scale water filtration system. If that doesn't pan out, we can expect a solicitude from our Directiva for water filtration as well. But I just want to lift up the resourcefulness of our Directiva, who they want to look at multiple different sources for funding for development projects in their community. We did also talk about the school, the roads, the harvest. The corn harvest was good. The bean harvest was not good because there was too much rain. And so one crop came out well, the other crop did not. We also asked the Directiva if they would be willing to partner with us again. Our formal covenant relationship with San Ysidro expired in October 2016. We presented our apologies. We said, you know, we understand that part of this relationship is for us to send regular delegations. We have difficulty sending delegations every year. We know many of you would like to go but are not able to for whatever reason. And so we asked, would you be willing to partner with us again? Again, this is part of respecting the integrity of the community, to say, would you be willing to enter into this partnership with us again? Well, they had already been talking about this as well, and they enthusiastically said yes, they would like to partner with us again. So at the end of our time visiting in the community, we had a fiesta on Thursday afternoon after a follow-up meeting with the Directiva just to sort of make sure that everything was in order after our visits. So we loaded the piñatas onto the truck and drove those out to San Ysidro from Berlin. And on Thursday, instead of a formal introduction where we all sat up here, we sat out among the community members and got ready for the celebration that way. We were greeted, there was an invocation. I think there was more singing, I can't remember. And then we formally signed the new covenant, 4 copies, one to remain there, one with the pastoral team, one with our sister parish here, and one with covenant. So we got signatures on the new covenant. We are all there. And then the pastoral team served lunch to the entire community. So that was quite the operation, to file the entire community through the chapel. To provide a small meal for everybody in the community, a special gift from the pastoral team for the community there. And then, of course, piñatas. One for the boys, one for the girls, one for the women, one for the men, who was on his last leg there almost. And then we said our heartfelt and tearful goodbyes to everybody in the community as we prepared to make our way back home the next day. So I want to give Wilfredo the final word. He got the first word. He gets the final word in my part, and then I will hand it off to Pam. This was at the second Directiva meeting. Wilfredo called to mind the Transfiguration story where Jesus and some disciples go up the mountain and then Jesus starts to glow. And Wilfredo reminded us, Peter, the apostle, wanted to build tents and stick around there, and Jesus said, no, your work is down the hill. It's time for us to go a different direction here. And so he acknowledged it was time for us as groups to go our separate ways as well, but we get to hold that time together on the mountain as special time that we've spent together.
I just wanted to interject that Wilfredo is partnered with Claudia and I, Wilfredo and Vilma. And I met him in 2010, and he was not president of the Directiva at that time. He was in that open area, and we made eye contact, we connected. So I've seen him in 10 and 14 and 18. I think I'm 30 years older than he, but we are brothers, brothers in Christ. Thank you.
Go ahead. Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you about some of my impressions since it was the first time I was there. And, you know, when you're fortunate enough to live in a wealthy country like this, I mean, you know about the poor, but...
Could you talk up a little bit?
I thought I was on.
Are you still muted, perhaps?
No, I thought I turned it on. Let's see.
Yeah, she's on.
I'll talk louder.
She's five.
Well, anyway, I just thought it would, you know, when you grow up in a country and you live there, that you have every advantage, and you know about the poor, but when you go down and, you know, actually experience how they live, that's quite an eye-opening experience. So, oops. The first slide here, you know, when you farm just an acre and a half, and the ground is hilly and not good, how do you grow a crop? Well, you don't unless you have some fertilizer, which fortunately this congregation provides, and they really depend on that, you know, for their crops. Otherwise, they wouldn't have much to live on. Okay. You've seen this slide before, but I wanted to point out to you that even though there's some water provided by the city, a lot of it they get from the rain when it does rain, and so it would come off the roof spouts into the water tanks. So, you know, when that happens, you know, you got to realize that water isn't very clean, and so there can be a lot of medical problems because of that. I think they're working on trying to get some filters for the water. They're going to apply for some grants for that, but that's a big problem. So, how do you stay healthy when you have to drink dirty water, you know, from roofs? And what kind of problems can result? Well, one of them we discovered is some of these people are in kidney failure, including the young man who's a teenager in the back in the green shirt. You know, I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. There's no medical treatment. There are two dialysis machines in the whole country, and certainly not near where you are, and so, you know what your future holds. If you get sick, why bother going to the doctor if you can't be treated anyway? We did bring down some aspirin and toothpaste and toothbrushes, but, you know, that's just a minor thing. They don't have access to even basic health care treatments like that. Okay. And then, as Ann talked about, you know, elementary or education beyond elementary school is not possible for many of the students. And so when they do go to high school, they have to go to another town, have to get that transportation because it can be, well, it's 45 minutes to Berlin, and then there's another school, I guess, in another community. And so there's not much chance of, you know, getting out of the community because of this. I guess there's one young man who's become a policeman, so that was good for him. Okay. So, you know, when under these circumstances, when crops fail, when you don't have a job, there's no government safety net. There's no welfare. And I mean, you know, here, I mean, we've got poor people, but at least we've got something, you know, but they don't have anything down there. So Everybody depends on each other. They support each other very well. Okay, another thing I noticed is there's trash all over the place. In the country, people just dump their trash. In town, in the town of Berlin, they have a trash pickup, I think they said maybe once a month. And so people throw their trash in the street or they go out in the country and dump it. So, you know, you'll see all this. There's no place to put it. And then I have a picture up here of this house where that you'll see there's, well, that's actually two dogs and a pig, I think. But, you know, you can't allow yourself to feel, to care about your pets, and because when you can hardly feed yourself. So there are a lot of stray animals. I mean, there's a lot of animals where the people live, but they just, you know, feed them scraps, so they're pretty skinny. And being the animal lover I am, I would sneak dog food to them, even though I wasn't supposed to. Okay. There's another picture of a dog that I saw. Okay, I think maybe Ann showed this picture, but I just wanted to give you an idea of how people live. And, you know, they don't have, most of them don't have beds or, you know, separate rooms. You sleep in hammocks, dirt floors, and that type of thing.
I wanted to comment. The fertilizer is in the lower right of the picture.
Oh,
the fertilizer
okay.
Just right there inside their house. I forgot
okay.
to say that.
I didn't notice that. Okay. Okay, and then I think you saw this picture before. You know, most of the people have dirt floors, but people who are fortunate enough to have something like a tile floor, they probably have relatives in the United States that are sending them money. And you might notice in this picture to the left, there's a refrigerator, which is very unusual because I think electricity is at a premium too. Okay, here's a picture of sort of a typical kitchen. They got the pots hanging upside down and things on a table. Here is somebody cooking. It's this pot. They're cooking over a fire. You know, they don't have a modern stove. So everything is prepared there. And so, you know, when you're doing washing by hand and cooking over fires like this, it doesn't give you much time to do anything extra. It's kind of like the pioneer days. You spend all your time doing tasks just to survive from day to day. You don't have, you know, a lot of clothes, so you're frequently washing them so you'll have something clean to wear. It's just, you know, sort of a minimal existence. And, you know, also the farmers out there, they're using hand tools. They don't have fancy equipment to work with. And one younger man we had with the family, he was having severe back problems because of all the work he had to do out there by himself, but he was doing it anyway. Okay. Oh, transportation. When we were going down the road, it's dirt roads, unless it rains, and then you can have, you know, be a flooded mess, muddy. But somebody who's got more money, they had this herd of cattle, so they were taking them down the road probably to some better grassland because we were there in the dry season. It hadn't started to rain yet, and so the cattle are skinny, and there's hardly any grass out there. I don't know how they survive on that. And then this is the truck that we rode in. You get in and hang on to the back. And, you know, it's pretty comfortable, except there was a little places where there was some, the road was a little paved, but actually that made it worse. It was bumpier, so the dirt roads were smoother, except one day when we were going home, we had raincoats with us, and we saw ahead that it was going to rain, so we put them on, and we got stuck in a downpour, and by the time we got back, the water was running down the street, the trash was running down the street. So that was quite an interesting experience. Okay. All right, now we're going to talk back to water again. You know, they don't have fancy sinks and bathrooms and stuff. And this is what you call a pila. And so you would put the water you collected in the middle, and then you would scoop that out and wash your dishes on one side and do your laundry on the other. So that's their laundry facilities, and then they would hang it up on a line. Now, this is a modern pila in the pastoral house where we were. And so you would fill that up when the city sends you water, and they had a big water tank in the back, too, to collect water. And so you dip this water out, and you use that to flush the toilet. So that was a new experience for me, because I thought, is this really going to work? But it does. And so even in the airports, in the fancy hotels, you cannot put your toilet paper in the toilet. You put it in the trash can, because the plumbing system's terrible all over the country. And then here is Kathy showed us how to wash our clothes. This is similar to what you saw out in the country, but again, same situation, the water's in the middle. And then on the left, we would wash the dishes, and on the right, you could put water in the, there and wash clothes. Okay, and then, I was really touched because, I mean, people were just so happy to see us. You know, you just can't believe. They just really look forward to us coming. And these two little girls dressed up in their best dresses, and that was so touching to see that. And then this is the day of the fiesta. And the ladies there are standing around the table, and they sell some jelly and some menace Sentinel products, and so we bought some of those. And, you know, I mean, having a party is just such a big deal. I mean, when life is so difficult, you just appreciate any little thing, and it's just neat to see that. You know, we're so spoiled over here, we take things for granted. Okay, and here we are, little boy hitting the piñata. They really enjoyed that. And then another picture of family sitting there, that lady and her little girl to the right is part of my family. So it was neat to meet them. Okay, I guess you saw this picture before. But anyway, you know, here they are going through the line to eat the food. And then I got a kick out of this picture and put her sunglasses on this little girl who taking her picture. Oh, so she does.
I don't know.
Okay. I didn't look at it that close. And then here's, you know, the goodbyes. It was difficult. That's Walfredo and Warren. And it's amazing, within such a short time, you form these close relationships with these people. You don't even realize it, you know, and you want to go back. And it's just, I mean, they are so responsible. You know, you don't have to worry about, well, where's my money going to go? I'm sending it to this foreign country, and who knows what they're going to do with it. Well, they are responsible. They, everybody has to cooperate to be part of the community. And if you're caught selling drugs or alcohol, you're out, you know. So everybody's really responsible. I mean, they have to be to survive. So anyway, you learn to be content with a simple blessings of life, family, friends, a roof over your head, enough food to eat, enough rain for water and to grow crops, some education for your children, and looking forward to friends from far away who come to visit you and give you life-giving support like water tanks, fertilizer, scholarships, and aspirin. So.
So we are grateful for the opportunity to share with you our experience visiting our families in El Salvador. And so we thank you for your support of this mission. We thank you for everything that you do to make our partnership with San Ysidro possible. Some of you, of course, have particular relationships with particular families in San Ysidro, and we did bring home several letters from our partner families. Those have been translated and are on a table in the fellowship hall, so pick those up after worship with thanks to our translators as well. And we give you thanks for your support of this mission.